Curlew in Autumn, a thriller serial for radio in 6 episodes by Edward Boyd, with David Ashton as Peter Kalman. Episode 6. Kalman has discovered that a beach at Dungrennan Bay is contaminated, and that this might explain the disappearance of Tim Leighton. Kalman has been offered information about the death of Nurse Nicholson, and has also been arrested as a terrorist by Superintendent Bullivant. Bullivant is an officer in the security services. He also once played fly half for England.
Major Peter Labelliere, Christian patriot and citizen of the world, his description, not mine, left instructions in his will that he was to be buried head downwards, because, he reckoned, the world was topsy-turvy. Looking at Superintendent Bullivant, it was possible to concede that Major Peter Labelliere may have had a point.
Have you anything to say?
What happened to the hospital receptionist?
I offered her more money than you did, plus a bonus.
Oh, free hairdos for the rest of her life?
No, nothing like that.
Was Dr. Weber easier to deal with?
Dr. Weber is no longer employed by the Spencer Watson Memorial Hospital.
Oh, neat. Very neat. So, Weber and his girlfriend are going to carry the can for the death of Nurse Nicholson.
He was very drunk. Doesn't remember a thing about it.
Oh, that makes it all right, of course. Practically death from natural causes.
The girl was driving.
Was she drunk too?
She had been drinking.
Oh, I don't know, Bullivant. I really don't. Coming from anybody else but you, I might almost believe it.
Because of something I once did to you on a rugby field.
Some things only have to happen once, and it doesn't matter whether they happen on a rugby field or a battlefield.
I've told you the truth.
But not the whole truth.
What more do you want to know?
What was Tim Leighton doing in that she hospital?
Dying.
Of what?
Leukemia.
And where is he now?
Oh, God alone knows.
Beg pardon, sir, the chief constable.
What the hell do you think you are doing here, Superintendent?
I'm only doing my job, sir.
Is it your job to disrupt the police force in this entire area? You've usurped my authority. Made me look an absolute fool.
I thought I'd explain the reasons for that,
sir. Now look here, Bullivant. Oh, hello, Peter. What are you doing here?
Being embarrassed.
Aye. Oh, I'm sorry, Peter. A little domestic discord.
Oh, no need to apologise. I was just going anyway. That right, Bullivant?
Right.
Better late than never. Dunsmore's resignation had given the chief constable furiously to think. He had not reached his present eminence without a strong sense of self-protection, and would not suffer gladly the increasing encroachment of Bullivant into his territory. But that would not, on that account, stop Bullivant from encroaching.
The man's mad.
Bullivant's a patriot.
So, what do we do?
Well, we could approach the chief constable, tell him about Tim Leighton and...
Watch him do nothing about it?
He was tearing into Bullivant when I left.
Oh, Peter, don't be so bloody naive. That was because his dignity was offended, because Bullivant hadn't given him his place by sending him the proper memos or reports in triplicate.
You really believe that?
More and more.
I seem to have heard all this before, Jenny.
Ah, but you never listen.
Perhaps you failed to put the point over.
You're not being honest, Peter. The truth is, whether you like it or not, you're one of them.
And Isaiah Dunsmore isn't.
I'm sorry you felt compelled to say that.
I wonder if Isaiah ever feels uneasy.
Oh, why should he?
I would if I had to put up with your constant intellectual slumming.
Say goodbye, Peter.
Gladly.
If anyone asks, I'm with Tim Leighton.
You know where he is?
Yes, Peter, I do.
In my book of famous quotations, which was a school prize for perfect attendance or religious knowledge or needlework or something like that, there was an epigram by Marshall. I cannot live with thee, nor without you. He must have known somebody like Jenny. She went out, not quite slamming the door behind her, and I heard her laughing as she spoke to someone on the stairs. Then that someone walked into the office. He was wearing a quiet scarlet leather suit and a bright yellow scarf, with a design of something that looked like purple tadpoles.
Thought I'd drop in, dear boy.
You look like an action painting, Walter.
I've just had the most bizarre experience, positively macabre.
Tell me about it.
I've just been round to McConaughey's, you know, the undertaker's.
I keep out of his way ever since I heard he was short-sighted.
Do you or don't you want to hear about my ordeal?
Sorry.
Anyway, this soapy little creep, McConaughey, has the old man stashed away in a kind of garden shed he calls a chapel of rest. Do I want to see the deceased? He asks in his oily way. Well, you know me.
Oh, yes, anything for a laugh.
How painfully true. So, he leads the way, and there's the defunct parent lying there. And I'm thinking how much he looks like a Renaissance Pope, when McConaughey absolutely freaks me.
He puts his hand up your skirt?
Worse, sweetie. He stared down at me, old dad, and uttered in sepulchral tones, "Beautiful, beautiful, just a teeny, teeny bit of corruption."
God almighty.
You will understand why I'm now on my way to the wine shop.
Only too well.
Oh, and while we're on the subject of mortality, I thought you might be interested in this old photograph I found in the old man's files.
My uncle smiled at me from the photograph, as though he found the whole thing faintly ridiculous. That was the way he'd always confronted the world, and the world took that smile at its face value, too preoccupied with getting and spending to notice the stoicism that lay behind that smile. It was the smile of Marcus Aurelius. The girl at his side produced in me a shock of recognition. She was wearing WAF uniform, and managed to give its ugly shapelessness a kind of distinction. There was something about her that made you feel cheated because you had not known her. Whom the gods love, die young. Nobody mentions where this happens, which is in places like Nocturne Cottage.
The roses were wonderful that last year of the war.
Who was she?
Her name was Anne.
Why all the secrecy?
One uses secrecy as a shield.
Does it say that in the Talmud?
I'm not ashamed of being Jewish.
No, nor have you any reason to be. Or have you?
What are you suggesting?
What were you doing in the Luftwaffe?
I have never been in the Luftwaffe.
But you mentioned being shot down.
I was a... what is the word? A stowaway.
Oh, come on, Shaw.
My name is not Shaw.
Who are you, then?
I am Jakob Fallstein.
That bomber must have been pretty crowded.
The trains to Auschwitz were worse.
Did the crew never suspect...
They knew.
They were consciously smuggling a Jew out of Germany.
They were.
They must have been very brave men.
There were many like them in Germany.
Look, can we get back to the girl in the photograph?
Her name was Anne Pringle.
Yes, well, what was her connection with my uncle?
Your uncle was very kind to her, at a time when she needed all the kindness she could get. After the baby was born, she was an outcast.
Was my uncle the father of her child?
The father of the child was the pilot of the aircraft that brought me here. His name was Hugo von Schellenberg.
He watched me closely, as though by sheer concentration he would render my thought processes visible. I thought of the woman in the photograph, who was Magda von Schellenberg's mother, and I thought she would never be dead while Magda lived. And I suddenly understood Magda's Temple of Peace and her donation of money to fund it as a retrospective gift to a man whose compassion had leapt across the barrier of war.
Your uncle was a mensch. You understand that word?
I don't have to.
I've tried to keep this cottage as it was when happiness was here.
Yes. What became of them?
They are both dead.
And you've kept Nocturne exactly as it was, as a kind of memorial to them?
Not a memorial. A celebration. I shall miss it very much.
You talk as if you're going away.
The new owner might think that my job is finished.
Oh, speaking on behalf of the new owner, I would have thought it was just beginning.
We shall not meet again.
Why not?
Perhaps because I think it is better. Perhaps because the fat man has made the decision for me.
Oh, he's still harassing you.
He knows no other way to relate to mankind.
Through the window, I watched him as he walked away from the cottage. Stately, dignified, sentimental as a pressed flower. Then he turned a corner and was gone, not even looking back. Nothing to look back for. Just me, Peter Kalman, a younger man abandoned to the future and next year's roses, which might, but would probably not, be wonderful. Then the telephone rang, and the present made its bid for attention against the sad past and the bleak and problematical future. What about me? It shrilled. You can't ignore me. I am now.
Who is that?
Who would you prefer it to be?
Almost anyone else.
Then hang up and dial Travel Line. Maybe they'll direct you out of my life.
Look, Peter, I'm tired of all this bickering.
Join the club, Jenny.
Let's agree to a truce, shall we?
All right. Willingly. But tell me something first.
I'm listening.
You know more about Shaw than you care to admit, correct?
Correct.
Huh. Would you care to elaborate?
Well, I first met him during the nuclear waste campaign.
What was his contribution?
Invaluable. And having said that, I'm saying no more.
Yes, but I'd like to ask
no
you...
No more, Peter.
All right. Why did you phone?
I need your help.
Where are you?
I'm in your office.
She was there, too. Coolly usurping the chair behind my desk, as presumptuous as Goldilocks. Dunsmore was with her, staring out of the window as if he was worrying which particular bear he represented.
You were quick, Peter.
Yes, what's the problem?
It's Tim Layton.
Yeah, I thought it might be.
He's dying.
So I've heard.
We want you to do something about
it. Look, I'm not a doctor, I'm not a priest, I'm a lawyer, and according to you, I'm not even a very good one.
We want you to help us persuade him to go back into the hospital.
A simple yes or no is all that's required.
Oh, all right. Where is he?
The job you offered me, running the Temple of Peace.
Yes?
Jenny and I have decided to accept it.
Great. Suppose Layton tells us to get lost.
We get lost?
What kind of accommodation has he found this time?
Another cave.
Up market or down?
I don't know. He wouldn't let me see inside.
Wise man. You know, I've just had a terrible thought.
You want to share it?
Have I been elected to play Judas in this scenario? I mean, if Layton decides to stay put, do we just leave him to die alone in the cave?
No way.
So we go to the police then?
Wrong again.
Have you made some kind of arrangement for him to be looked after?
Charles has agreed to babysit.
We took a turning and drove along a track. Then the track faded and turf became springy under our feet, and the land fell away on either side until we were climbing along a narrow promontory, at the end of which stood a high wall of rock. And at the foot of this wall, we could glimpse the opening of the cave. It was ridiculous, anomalous, a cave in the clouds, as though some crazy angel had been mining for fresh sea air. Tim Layton came out of the cave and walked painfully to meet us. He was thin to the point of emaciation, and he looked tired, as though even to cast a shadow was a great effort.
And who are you, boyo?
My name is Peter Kalman.
And what do you do to earn a crust?
I'm a lawyer.
Oh. If you come to tell me my rich uncle in Pennsylvania has just left me all his money, break it to me gently.
He's come to ask you to get back into hospital.
And to look after your rights. Oh, Isaiah Bach, you're talking bloody wet. What rights have people like me got? What rights have we ever had? They've got all the rights. That's what you should be shouting about. They've got the right to destroy anything that walks or swims or crawls.
Mr. Layton...
Don't talk about my rights, Mr. Lawyer, because they don't add up to nothing. Along comes a pair of fancy doctors, and they sign a piece of paper, and that's me clapped in hospital like it was a jail. Then when I goes grift, they comes after me.
I'm sorry to...
Oh, you meant well, Jenny. But you have had a wasted journey. As for you, Mr. Lawyer, you can do me a favor. Take this message from me to whoever it may concern. I shall die without your help and with my own dignity.
He turned and walked away. Timothy Layton, nobody of nowhere in particular. And I saw him enter the cave and disappear into its darkness. We talked about him on the way back, and it was the way people talk on the way back from a funeral.
He was one of the gentlest people I've ever met.
How long did you know him?
About 7, 8 years.
And you, Isaiah?
Not quite that long.
I remember him telling me about his one great failing.
What was that?
He tried to tame a curlew, but the bird didn't want to know.
Why a curlew?
Well, I think he felt a special affinity for them. He used to say, "The curlew in autumn moves to the coast and is silent."
I dropped Jenny and Isaiah Dunsmore in town and looked in at the office to see who was feeling deprived without my services. Two people were waiting for me. One was the chief constable, and the other was a very, very fat man.
You keep a regular office hours, Peter.
Have they made it a criminal offence?
Sometimes you remind me of your uncle. The same dry wit.
Aye.
I thought we should clear up the little misunderstanding you had with Bullivant this morning.
What misunderstanding?
Ah, I'm glad you're prepared to forgive and forget.
I didn't say that.
Would you care to tell us what you are saying, Carl?
I am saying that there was and is no misunderstanding. I understand you only too well.
Peter, if you're referring to a certain unfortunate incident at Twickenham...
Oh, for God's sake, you know quite well that's what I'm talking about. This fat freak put me in a wheelchair for 2 years.
You were lucky. Does it ever dawn on you how unbearably smug you are, Carmen?
You reckon?
The Americans have a saying. I'd rather be right than be president. That's you, Carmen, isn't it?
Go on.
But who makes the rules? Tell me that, Carmen.
No.
Who decides what is right and what is wrong?
May I interrupt here? I'm not opting out, but I'm afraid I do have to go now. You don't mind, Peter?
No, not at all.
Right, I'll see you both tomorrow.
So, where were we?
Rules. And who makes them, remember?
Yes. You said I was unbearably smug. Why?
I was put out of the game, too. And permanently, I was banned. Ostracized. Asked to take my kids away from school.
You know, one thing baffles me, Bullivant.
Mm-hmm.
That day at Twickenham, why did you do what you did?
You were making us look ridiculous. I'm sorry, Carmen. I am sorry. No, it's water under the bridge anyway.
Oh, you're wrong there, Bullivant.
I don't think so.
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think someone was at that game and saw what happened. Someone who said to himself, "Now there is a fine, vicious little Englander if ever we need one." And, of course, in time they did. And that someone represents the people who make the rules in this country or dispense with them altogether if necessary.
I might just have a word with them about you.
Why not? Just drop my name in casually when you tell them how you disposed of Morag Nicholson.
You astonish me, Calman.
In what way?
You're so bloody naive.
Oh, you expect too much from a simple country lawyer.
I'd have expected you to appreciate the fact that down here you're only 36 miles from Northern Ireland.
Oh, does that mean that the closer you are to Northern Ireland, the easier it is to get away with murder?
You simply don't realize.
I realize the extent of your gratitude to the man who picked you off that scrap heap.
Is being loyal a crime?
I think that question was answered at Nuremberg.
You make me sick, Carmen. You and all the other weak sisters.
These same weak sisters stopped you dumping nuclear waste around here, Bullivant.
Ah, you're weak sisters, all of you. You, Carmen, and Dunsmore, and that stupid bossy girl. You're innocents, every last one of you. Babes in a wood filled with wolves. Do you know how your Jewish friend from Nocta arrived in this country?
He told me.
Do you know his real name?
Yes, he told me that too.
And did you know that he was a prominent member of the German team of scientists that was trying to develop an atomic bomb?
No. No, I didn't.
And why didn't he go back to Germany after the war ended?
Or perhaps he remembered too many people like you.
He stayed here because he was a sleeper. An agent who lies doggo for years if necessary. Until the time is ripe for him to become energized. Oh,
rubbish.
And you all bought his story, didn't you? The whole Mills and Boone schmaltz.
So, Scholl was a spy, was he?
Yes. And so was that bloody Taffy who lived in the cave.
Oh, not to mention myself and Jenny and Dunsmore and the chief constable. Yes? Yes, he's here. It's for you.
Bullivant. Huh? No, I'll come at once. Your Jewish pal and that crazy Welshman are holed up in a cave. There's been a shooting.
Looking back, I don't know why I went with him, or even why he raised no objection. I think he was high at the prospect of violence. He had probably looked the way he did now. That afternoon, he broke my back.
You and I, Carmen, live in different worlds.
You're dead right. You're a kind of leftover from the Spanish Inquisition. A hunter of heretics.
A hunter of heretics? I rather like that.
Yes. The trouble is, you not only hunt them, you define them as well.
You rate me too highly.
I rate you about 10 places below Jack the Ripper.
Not fair, Carmen.
And like Jack the Ripper, you'll probably get away with it.
Get away with what?
Killing Morag Nicholson and fitting up Scholl and Timothy Leighton.
Did I do all that?
Nothing will persuade me otherwise.
We turned down the road that led to the cave and found Archie Douglas waiting.
What's the situation, Constable?
They're still in the cave, sir.
Any more shooting?
No, just that yin shot, sir.
Look, why don't you let me try to talk to them?
No.
You want them dead, don't you? That's the way you've written the script.
And you've written yours, and it's all white flags and sweet reasons.
Look, let me at least go there and...
If you attempt to interfere in any way, I shall shoot you.
I should have called his bluff, but I knew it was no bluff at all. So I stood there, safe in my principles, while Bullivant went dodging up the hill. And a terrible silence fell as he reached the mouth of the cave. And Tim Leighton stood up and blew Bullivant's head off. And the silence continued as Tim threw the gun away and walked down the hill towards me with his hands above his head.
Well, Mr. Lawyer, you're in the right place at the right time.
Yes, I suppose so, Mr. Leighton.
I'm proper vexed about Mr. Scholl.
What happened?
Well, when we first spotted the coppers and I told him what I had in mind, there was a bit of an argument. He tried to grab the gun from me and we struggled back and forward and the gun went off.
He's dead?
Yes. I'm vexed about him. But not about the other fellow. I saw his face as he came up here. He looked just like an executioner.
That night we drove down to Dungrennan Bay. Jenny, Dunsmore and myself. And stood gazing at the atomic complex and wondered what we were. The three wise men, the three stooges, the three musketeers, or simply the three blind mice. I thought of Bullivant, and some wise words of Robert Louis Stevenson came into my mind. It is not the hangman who dishonors society. It is society that dishonors the hangman. Then I thought of Tim Leighton, who killed Bullivant and who loved curlews. The curlew in autumn, he said, moves to the coast and is silent. And the strange thought came that perhaps it will not always be so. Perhaps one day the curlew will stop moving, blindly obedient, to the coast or anywhere else, and it will find a voice and break its silence and change the world.
In episode 6 of Curlew in Autumn by Edward Boyd, Peter Kalman was played by David Ashton. Isaiah Dunsmore was played by Gregor Fisher, Jenny by Stella Forge, Superintendent Bullivant by Arthur Boland, Walter Hansford by Ronald Aitken, Shawl by Brown Darby, Chief Constable McGuffog by John Buick, Constable Archie Douglas by Robert Patterson, and Tim Leighton by Tom Criddle. Curlew in Autumn was directed in our Edinburgh studios by Patrick Rayner.